FunFactory.com has partnered with Locker Room Talk and Shots. So when you use my special code SELS20, you get 20% off your Fun Factory purchase. Just head to us.funfactory.com and use my code SELS20 at checkout for 20% off sex toys, lube, massage oils, and more. Cheers.
Do the sex.
Hi, this is Annette Benedetti, your hostess for Locker Room Talk and Shots, the podcast that likes to think of itself as the queer NPR of raunchy women's sex talk. You are about to sit in on the kind of conversations women have on their girls' nights out or behind closed doors while enjoying delicious drinks and dishing about sex. Think fun, honest, and feminist as fuck, and always with the goal of fighting the patriarchy one orgasm at a time. Welcome to the locker room.
Ring loop. Today's locker room talk and shots topic is non-monogamy and open relationships nonsense or a better approach to love. Listener, you've been around for a while. If you've been around for a while, then you're well aware that over the last 10 to 15 years of my life, I have primarily been in non-monogamous relationships with some monogamy mixed in. And over the journey of my own relationship life, I have been faced with a lot of scrutiny. I've been faced with a lot of questions. And to be frank, I have been in community with poly people and people involved in open relationships, especially recently, and in situations that made me question non-monogamy. Now, here's the good news. I have a guest today who specializes in non-monogamous relationships and alternative relationship styles. And I feel fairly confident that she is going to be able to help us answer the questions we have about it. My guest today is Effie Blue. She is a relationship coach specializing in supporting people who are curious about transitioning into or who have hit roadblocks in non-traditional relationships. Her coaching philosophy, relationships by design as opposed to relationships by default, encourages folks to consciously and dynamically design their relationships with the goal of everyone thriving. She is also the co-host of Curious Fox podcast for those challenging the status quo in love, sex, and relationships. And if this podcast is about anything, it is about challenging the status quo. So Effie, could you take a moment to introduce yourself to my listeners?
Absolutely. My name is Effie Blue, like you said. I'm a relationship coach. I've been doing this for about 7 years. Prior to that, I was in the corporate world. I had my experience in that. And then I pivoted at a time in my life where I was also figuring out my own relationship structures. And I had already been through my life and came up with this idea of life by design. I just realized that at that point in my life, I was doing really well in my career. On paper, I should have been thriving. I was earning a lot of money. I had status. I was, I was very high up in my career. I was traveling the world. And I wasn't content and I couldn't really figure out why. And it just culminated with, again, another period of my time. I'd moved to New York City and I met some people that were living kind of these different type of relationships. And I was in a position where I could just press pause, take a sabbatical and really kind of rip my life apart to really understand like where was this discontentment coming from. And with that, I sort of came up with this idea of really for my own work, a life by design. Like what would happen if I designed everything from scratch for myself. And I made decisions really with this one idea of, will I thrive? If I do this, will I thrive? If I do this, will this nurture and support a state of thriving for me? And I was able to do that. And the one part that I really wasn't getting it is the relationship part. So I honed in on that. And I'm a nerd. I'm naturally a nerd. I was the kid whose homework you copied at school, who, you know, who did extra credit, who read the extra books, was ahead in class. So I'm a nerd by nature. So I just took this deep dive into relationship psychology. I went back to school, retrained, and came out the other side as a relationship coach. And I really wanted to understand and help people who the one size fits all prescription from society around relationships, the relationship by default model, wasn't working for, because it wasn't working for me. And then once I figured out that I could also have a relationship by design, then it was a big revelation for me. And it was a big passion for me to then spread that word and support people to do the same for themselves.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I think that resonates with me. And I imagine it will resonate with a lot of my listeners. So listener, I want you to stay to the end, because as always at the end, I'm going to give you your takeaways with Effie. And if you are thinking about trying a new relationship model, stepping into the non-traditional, then by the end of this podcast, you are going to have sort of a starter package to launch that. If you're already well on your way or have been giving non-monogamy a try, you're also just, I think, going to get a lot of information that's going to help solidify your movement forward in those relationships. As always, if you have questions, I want you to scroll down to the description of this podcast. There is a link and you can leave me a voicemail with your question. I can get answers from Effie. I will give you your answers either in another podcast or an article, but leave me your voicemail. You don't have to leave your name. You can be anonymous. So do that as well. Effie, I am excited about this conversation. I got coffee over here. What time? You are in Turkey. What time is it there?
It is 7:15 p.m. in the evening.
We're at opposite ends of the day. Well,
we are. We are. Exactly. But I will join you with a cup of tea.
I love it. All right. Well, cheers. Let's talk about
cheers.
Sex and relationships. I just want to start this conversation. For those who are completely new to the concept of non-monogamy, can you just define what non-monogamy is in as a relationship style?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's funny. If you asked me this 5 years ago, people really didn't understand. But I definitely have noticed in the last 5 years, it's become a huge part of the zeitgeist. It has become a very legitimate relationship structure. And it is... non-monogamy, it's kind of defined itself in the negative, right? So it's not monogamy. Monogamy is two people at a time. It used to be two people for life, and these days it's two people at a time. So a couple that is in an intimate close relationship and not dating anybody else or not seeing anybody else. Non-monogamy, on the other side, is when you are open to having multiple relationships at the same time, and it can look in so many forms, right? This is not linear, but just to give you sort of two different styles that it might look like. So you can have something like monogamish, right? Which is something that Dan Savage came up with. And this idea is that you are in a monogamous relationship, maybe you're a couple, and then every now and then you'll double. You will maybe go and have a threesome with somebody, or you'll go and hang out at a sex party, or, you know, on your birthday, you get a, you know, whole pass for someone, right? So like you're monogamous, there's just the two of you, and then every now and then you're doubling outside, right? Now you're sort of moving more to the middle. Maybe you're in an open relationship, so you recognize a core relationship, you know, or some people will call it a primary relationship. My language that I choose is really core relationship. So you kind of recognize the coupledom that you're in while making room and space and time for having other relationships, right? While recognizing that there's one core relationship. Now we're moving sort of to the other side of that. Now we are in the realm of polyamory, like poly, many, amory, many loves. So polyamory, you're looking at long-term involved intimate relationships with multiple people where you may or may not recognize the core relationship, but you're really looking at long-term invested, loving relationships with more than one person. So that's kind of what the very roughly the lay of the land looks like in non-monogamy.
We'll be right back. My code SELS20 is your key to kicking off the sexiest new year ever had when you use it at funfactory.com. Enjoy 20% off Fun Factory's luxury products, including vibrators, cock rings, lube, and more when you use my code SELS20. Check out the Vim vibrating wand. Yes, the one featured on this podcast thumbnail. Grab the nose vibrating cock ring and experience more simultaneous orgasms in 2024. And don't forget to check out their rabbit style vibes. I'm talking about the Lady Bi for toe curling blended O's all year long. Just fill your cart and use code SELS20 at checkout and enjoy 20% off when you shop funfactory.com. Cheers. Right. So that was interesting and answered one of my questions. I always was curious about, when do you go from non-monogamy to calling yourself polyamorous? Mm. And it sounds sure. like you define that as when you really move into multiple long-term relationships that have more of an equal status?
Sure. So this is just a technicality, but every polyamorous person is non-monogamous, right? So okay. Non-monogamy is almost like an umbrella term. So you have, as an umbrella, you have monogamy, and then you have non-monogamy. And then under the non-monogamous, you know, broad umbrella term, you have open relationships, you have polyamory, you have swinging, you have monogamish, you know, you, and then you have different types of these relationships. You have non-hierarchical polyamory, where everyone's kind of, there's no recognized one relationship, but everyone's on the same footing. You have parallel polyamory, where people are in long-term invested relationships that aren't connected to each other. You have kitchen table polyamory, where everyone's kind of is able to sit around the table and break bread and get to know each other. So it's really depends on what your relationship looks like, and it's kind of what you want to call it. It's really, you know, it's really up to you. Just from a terminology point of view, if you think of non-monogamy as an umbrella term, and then everything else is like versions of non-monogamy. I hope that helps.
Yes, it does. And I mean, I think one thing that has always drawn me to non-monogamy is that it doesn't feel like there's this rigid set of rules mm-hmm. around what you have to call it or how it's structured. And sure. while it's something that draws me to it, I think it's also something that raises an eyebrow from people. Sure. When I first came to non-monogamy, it was people always called it ethical non-monogamy. And mm-hmm. I have moved away from that because in my mind, I feel like it is ethical. Non-monogamy is ethical by nature, whereas I question sometimes how ethical monogamy is because it feels very like forced and oftentimes unhealthy and controlling and stuff like that. So I don't use ethical non-monogamy. I just call it non-monogamy. But yeah, I think the lack of rules, sometimes people are like, assume it's like this free-for-all where people can mm-hmm. just fuck whoever they want to mm-hmm. without worrying about how it makes someone else feel. Can you address mm-hmm. that top concern that comes up?
Absolutely. And also, I want to just join you in, I am the same. I feel very strongly about not calling ethical non-monogamy ethical non-monogamy, because non-ethical non-monogamy is cheating. So in any healthy relationship, regardless of their structure, monogamy or non-monogamy, is ethical in its design, right? So I don't necessarily think monogamy isn't ethical. I think there is non, you know, I think there are ethical monogamy, and then if it's not well managed, then it's not ethical. But I think as long as the relationship is healthy and thriving and considered, it is in my book, it's ethical by nature. So I don't necessarily believe in saying ethical non-monogamy either. I think the reason why we say it, actually, my theory on this is, and I talk about this a lot, is because it's still scary, and it is a pre-qualifier to kind of tell people, no, it's okay, it's ethical. Like, I think just we have to somehow qualify this idea of non-monogamy, because the initial idea of it is like, it's wrong, it's dirty, it's immoral. Like, it just still carries all these connotations. So I think that the ethical non-monogamy piece is to kind of appease the people who are jumping into conclusions to think exactly what you're saying. It's just like fucking around all the time. Nobody cares about anybody. Nobody cares about the other person or the relationship and all that kind of stuff, which is not the case. But I think that's where the ethical piece comes from. And I don't use it either for this reason. And around what it looks like. So this is the way I think about it. Monogamy comes out of the package with what I call default settings, right? Like, your phone comes out of the box and it has got default setting pre-installed. And you can very much just use it as is. Right? Somebody thought about a user experience, somebody installed a bunch of settings, and it works and it functions and it is kind of same across the board, right? So anybody, you know, my 8-year-old mom can get an iPhone out of a bag, you know, out of a box and use it and it will function, right? And I think that's kind of what monogamy is. Society has come up with a set of default settings, if you will, around relationships, and they call it monogamy, and you can use it out of the box. It is fine, right? When you cross over to non-monogamy, you are now customizing your relationship, right? You can think about it as that. You can think about it as, I'm now going to go through my settings and see, like, how do I want it to work for me? Like, for me specifically, like, how do I want it? When I look at my phone, what do I want it to say? Like, all that kind of stuff. Translate that into relationships. Or you can look at that as paint by numbers monogamy versus a blank canvas non-monogamy. And yes, it can be really exciting to have a blank canvas that you can, like, come up with your own design. It could also be scary. Like, most of us who write know how scary a blank page can be, right? And then when you are then talking to people who are talking about non-monogamy and they're saying there are no set rules, you make up your own rules, right? Now it's exciting and scary at the same time. So yes, that is very real. What it means is that you then have to become very conscious. So the relationship by design idea is around this. It's about consciously and dynamically designing your relationship. Consciously meaning, what do I want from a relationship? Like, what do I want a relationship to afford me, right? And I don't mean that transactionally, but I am co-creating a relationship with a person or persons, right? Why am I doing that? What is the purpose of this? How do I want to feel in this relationship, right? And then dynamically designing all the features of a relationship to really support that idea of what do I want, and to support this idea of thriving. Like, are we all thriving in this co-creation that we've come up with? And no rules, free for all, you fuck who you want, you let go of your boundaries and let go of your responsibilities is a design, right? No judgment. If it works for you and your partner or partners, sure. If everyone's thriving in this kind of abandoned, nihilistic way of looking at relationships, good for you. But there's no judgment, right? What tends to happen is actually people kind of sit around the table and go, okay, now we have this blank canvas. What do we want it to look like? The big topic is, like, what are our boundaries, right? Like, what are the things that are not okay? That's kind of where we mostly start with. And then what I really encourage people to do, to spend as much time on boundaries as, what do I want it to be? Like, how do I want to feel? How do I then want to translate these desires, the way that we're going to thrive into a relationship structure? Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. So it involves a lot of communication where you're listening mm-hmm. to what each person you are in a relationship with wants mm-hmm. out of a relationship, needs out of a relationship, and figuring out how do we create the relationship that supports all of our needs and wants.
Yes. To the best and of our ability. You are first and foremost, you're listening to yourself.
Right.
Right. Because now you're saying, no, monogamy, I'm not just adhering to monogamy, but I actually have to now tap into myself and decide, what is it that I need? What is it that I want? What is it that I desire, I seek, that I'm curious about, right? And that piece comes first. And then once you get clear about that, then you put that on the table, and the people that you want to be in a relationship with do the same, hopefully. And then you, co-create something that works for you.
It sounds amazing. it has been amazing for me for the most part. But the question that comes up, and I think everyone probably deals with at some point, is what about jealousy? People will say to me all of the time, I could never be non-monogamous. I could never have my partner with somebody else. I'm just too jealous. I just couldn't do it. Like, I couldn't do it. I wouldn't trust them. I'd be worried about them leaving me for someone else. That is such a big piece that for most everybody, and I know not everybody, but most everybody, that is ingrained into us because we have been born into a society, for the most part, most of us, where monogamy is the default. And we are taught to get and keep a partner at any cost and to see all the other threats out there, right? And somehow fight them off and keep this person. So what is your response to that? We'll be right back. Start the new year off with a bang. My code EXPLORES15 gets you 15% off womanizer.com's famous Pleasure Air Tech sex toys. You know, the clit-satisfying sucking sensation that guarantees explosive orgasms. Just go to womanizer.com and check out my personal favorite, the Womanizer Duo 2. Get ready for blended orgasms, or the Premium 2. Womanizer.com has something for you, whether you are seeking clitastic satisfaction, blended orgasms, or explosive G-spot experiences. Just shop womanizer.com and use my code EXPLORES15 at checkout for 15% off. That's 15% off all womanizer.com products with my code EXPLORES15 at checkout. Cheers.
For sure. I think jealousy is like in the top three questions that get asked when you talk about non-monogamy. So I'm not surprised you're going there. And absolutely, jealousy is very real. Honestly, I haven't met anybody who's healthy and sane who does not feel jealousy. It is an emotion just like anything else, right? It is like fear. It's like sadness. It's like joy. It's like, nervousness. It is an emotion that we all feel. It is a composite emotion, right? So it's not sort of your sort of more primary emotions like fear or love, right? Your sort of jealousy is a composite emotion. And the research says that jealousy occurs when we perceive a significant threat to a significant relationship. This is the very simple sort of definition of how jealousy occurs, right? This is what the research says. When we perceive a significant threat to a significant relationship, right? So if you break this down, this idea of perceiving a significant threat to a significant relationship can happen in any relationship, right? Because now you're saying significant relationship. That could be a monogamous relationship, just the one person. It could be parental. It could be friendship. It could be any relationship that you feel significant to, right? Now a significant threat. That's also very relative. What is a significant threat, right? Some people can see their partner's promotion in their career a significant threat, right? It doesn't have to be another person, right? Or they can think of a new interest in a new hobby as a significant threat because it takes them away from the relationship, it takes away from that, right? So, you know, that's also a big topic now, and it's being perceived. So it's real or perceived, we don't know. As long as we're perceiving it, this idea of this feeling of jealousy is triggered, right? And yes, in non-monogamous relationships, there are more obvious and societally reinforced threats that can come up, right? There's no story, for example, in our broader society around two women who love the same man and get along. All the stereotypes that we have out there is that mother and daughter, or mother and daughter-in-law, you know, all these sort of couplings when you have two women loving a man, regardless of the type of love, we are being told there should be conflict, right? So in our sort of social, in our social consciousness, we think that if two women love one man, there should be conflict, right? So all these ideas that are in what we call in the show the noise, right? So this idea of a threat is out there, and what we've been told is should be scary. The idea that if our partner is interested in someone else, they are inevitably going to leave us, right? again, that is like an idea that's just in our noise. Like, it's not confirmed, right? Mm. One of the things I say to people, why would anybody leave a happy, healthy, thriving relationship, especially if it's an open one, right? So let's just look at where these fears are coming from. Are they coming from the idea that you're now non-monogamous and all these people might steal your partner? Or on some level, are you aware that there are some cracks in your core relationship and you haven't addressed it? And now that those guardrails have been taken off, you can't avoid seeing those things, right? Because what tends to happen with non-monogamy, especially if you're transitioning into it from a monogamous structure, it's like stadium-sized floodlights gets turned on onto the relationship. So things that were once like dim lit, you know, in the corners that you don't really address, suddenly all those things are loud, bright, and clear that you have to deal with.
That jealousy and fear is not rooted necessarily in the reality that someone else might steal your partner. It's that there is something going on in that core relationship that you know on some level is problematic, that you're not dealing with and taking care of. And mm-hmm. so it's not a secure relationship. Sure. It is in an insecure place.
For sure. Or you're insecure within yourself, right? You have some limiting beliefs around about yourself that are saying something like you're not good enough, that you don't matter enough, that they don't care about you enough, that you're not lovable enough, right? So suddenly these negative self-beliefs are also bringing fear into the relationship. So jealousy is really about fear. It's a significant perceived significant threat to a significant relationship. Essentially, it's about fear. Yeah. So when jealousy comes up, my invitation to people is pause, take some breaths, you know, truly sit down, feel your feet on the ground, feel your seat, your butt on the seat, take ideally 10 breaths. That's a lifetime for some people, like 5 breaths that will regulate your emotional, your nervous system. And then ask yourself, what am I afraid of? And keep asking until you peel back the layers, so you really get to the issue. And I think you'll find, you know, that is what you need to deal with. Your partner showing interest in somebody else is triggering a fear. So you need to get to the fear to understand what's going on for you.
I don't think of jealousy as this bad emotion. A lot of people frame jealousy as it's this bad thing you have to get rid of. I've always thought of jealousy as a guide. It's just another emotion that gives me information. Right?
For sure.
It gives me information about myself. It gives me information about my relationship. It gives me information about how I feel about the other person. And absolutely. That then the trick is like being honest with yourself about that information you get and then taking action, right? Whether it's I've got to fix something with myself, or I need to fix the relationship, or I need to address something directly with my partner.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's also worth thinking about envy as well, because I think envy comes up too. So with envy, so with jealousy is like, I don't want you to have that thing. Envy is, I want that too, right? That's the difference. And sometimes envy comes up, in situations like this. Let's say, you know, you and your partner have a great relationship. They're now dating somebody else. And as a part of that relationship, they're now embarking on something like new, fresh, and exciting. They've taken up a hobby together, right? They've started sailing together. I'm living by the sea right now, so like sailing is on my mind. So they've started sailing together, and you're noticing that, you know, that's bringing joy to your partner's life, and they're growing, and there's this connection. Is it jealousy? Is it envy, or is it both? Is it telling you that actually you're envious of of what they're doing, and you want that too, right? So if that is the case, what is the conversation you're having with your partner around, hey, like, I'm really loving this connection, this new thing, this newness that you're experiencing. I really would like that for us too. Like, what can we do? Right. So I think that's really important too. Just realize that jealousy is one thing. It's more about fear and what you're afraid of. And envy is about what is it that you want that you're not getting.
And it's important to be able to tell the difference between jealousy and envy. What is there a trick to being able to tell which one you're experiencing? I guess it can still be confusing, right?
Oh, of course. These things are very confusing. These are very nuanced feelings. And also you're experiencing these feelings in a time of confusion because there's new people coming in and maybe you're transitioning and, you know, you're activated, right? These are activated feelings. So it can get very difficult to tell them apart and get clear. I would really go back to what I was saying, which is try to identify the base feeling, right? So if it's about fear, right, I'm going to be left, I'm not good enough, most of the time you're coming down into fear of abandonment, fear of rejection. Like those are like you dig. Mostly you're coming down to I'm not good enough or they're going to leave me. Like those are often where we come down to. And if you're dealing with that, you're in the realm of jealousy. And the work is about, getting to a secure place, finding self-confidence, being able to get to know yourself, being self-expressed and all that kind of stuff, right? Envy is when you dig, and it's about a wanting, a yearning, like, I want that too, right? And it doesn't come from fear. It's more like, it can actually feel like, on the negative side, it can feel like resentment. You know, this is the thing that I want and I'm not getting. It could be a yearning. Oh, I wish I had that thing too. Right. And the work around that is very different. It's about getting clear about what you want, negotiating the things that you want, making a request, actually sort of figuring out how you're going to get the thing, you know, get the thing or the feeling or the connection that you're yearning for. So those are kind of the ways to do some self-inquiry and tell the difference. Does that help?
It's very, very helpful. I want to shift gears a little bit. I would say throughout my dating experience, when I've connected with people, oftentimes men, more often men than women, because I date both, I have run into people who use non-monogamy in what I would consider sort of abusive ways, meaning they say that they're non-monogamous, but instead of creating non-monogamous relationships, it feels more like they're just trying to be able to have sex with as many people as they want, or they have a primary relationship and they're like, oh, we're non-monogamous and my wife is fine with this. And it really becomes more of a just trying to see how many people they can hook up with type thing. And suddenly you're wrapped up in this relationship you think you're in, and you're actually just dating someone who's kind of using it in this harmful way. And I think it's one of the ways that non-monogamy gets, again, a bad reputation. People who are like, oh, there's non-monogamy, so I guess I can be in this relationship and then I can do whatever I want. Can you speak to that at all?
Sure. I wonder if it's just non-monogamy, because I can definitely see how monogamy is weaponized too. That it is it's a weapon for control, weapon for oppression. I'm not saying non-monogamy is those things. That's not what I'm saying. Absolutely not. What I'm saying is it can be used as tools for control and oppression, in a way that non-monogamy can be used to avoid intimacy and closeness and connection and all those kind of things. So I think if you're not in a good place, you can weaponize any relationship structure and ends up being kind of harmful to you, and you don't really realize, but it's being harmful to you as well and the people that you're connecting with as well. So I think it's really about the people who are dating to be conscious and have, you know, good communication to get clear about all these things, you know, and asking questions like, what is available in this relationship? How do you want to have this relationship? If they're saying to you, oh, you know, my wife and I were in an open relationship, she's okay with it. And if it doesn't feel right to you, just ask the questions. Like, how long have you been non-monogamous? What does that look like for you? How often do you date? Does she date? Does he date? And having the confidence to realize, I think some people don't ask those questions, either because they don't want to upset the situation, and they don't want to think about the fact that this person they're dating has another partner, right?
Right.
And I would discourage people from both of those things, right? you go into any relationship with confidence. You know, that is important, and confidence to take care of yourself, to really understand what kind of relationship that you're walking into. And if you find yourself not wanting to think about the person having another partner, you probably shouldn't be dating them. And I think hopefully you're over those things and you're at a dating stage with this person. Just ask the questions, you know, and do you just want to have fun, sexy, one-time experiences? And if you do, that's okay. I just need to know, because I might want those, and I can then come into this relationship in that mode versus thinking there's going to be something more and bigger than that, right? And this really just goes back to this communication around, like, tell me what kind of a relationship you're looking for, and if you're in an existing relationship, what does that look like? What are your boundaries? What are your agreements? What's okay? What is not okay? What is available in this relationship? So just to really kind of ask what I think to be sensible questions as you're dating people.
Yeah, it sounds to me like communication ahead of time is the big piece here.
Of course.
Decisions can't be made in a moment. It's like at the beginning, what are you looking for? What are you okay for? When you're both clear-minded and sitting down and talking about what you're doing. And I think what happens oftentimes is people just jump into things without those conversations and without having time to really get in touch with what I want. And what I really stands out that you said is that both non-monogamy and monogamy are weaponized for control in very different ways. In very different ways. I chose, after being in a very long marriage and a series of monogamous relationships that felt very controlling, I chose non-monogamy, and because I didn't want to feel controlled, and I wanted to feel like I could choose what my relationships looked like. And generally speaking, I feel like that has been a better route for me. I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, I was recently in community with a group of people who defined themselves as polyamory. And it really was the first time since I began my my non-monogamy journey that I was sort of jarred and questioned. This community of queer people really had this form of non-monogamy where you never knew kind of what was going on, and we'd all go out dancing, and then people would end up making out, and then but then go back to whatever their relationships were. And there wasn't really, like, there weren't conversations taking place between people ahead of time. And I had a night where I was out with a date, and it was like fresh meat in the water. And I was really jarred by it, having sort of my people I thought were my friends and community descend on this person. And we, you know, we had been consuming alcohol and stuff like that. And in the moment, well, after I'd had drinks, people asked me consent. Oh, do you mind if I make out with your date? And I wasn't able to express myself fully, right? I consented to the situation, but then had feelings the next day. And the response I largely would get from people while in this community, if anyone was upset with something that happened on a night out, it was like, well, I thought you were poly. Why do you have a problem with that? You're supposed to be poly. And I think this conversation really helps clarify. Polyamory, non-monogamy isn't, it's not a free-for-all. It's not kissing whoever you want or make it out with whoever you want without conversations that really take place ahead of time. And I think you'd agree, in a consensual situation, right?
Sure.
And
yes,
this has to be a situation where everyone's clear-minded and able to really get in touch with, what do I want and what do I need out of relationships? And that's relationships with yourself, with an intimate partner, and with friends, right? And community. We'll be right back.
kick off the new year with a jaw-dropping 30% off of some of the hottest sex toys and my favorite, Gleam Lube, with code EXPLORERS30 when you shop thethruster.com. Known as the home of the incredible Build Your Own Thruster Prime, thethruster.com is also partnered with LaSierre.com, where you'll find gorgeous vibrating steel toys, and BoutiqueVoila.com, where you can grab a vibrating lipstick, a rubber ducky that gets lucky, or even get pounded by Thor's hammer, literally, all for 30% off with code EXPLORERS30. Just head to thethruster.com where you'll find The Thruster, La Sierre, and Boutique Voila, and enjoy 30% off your site-wide purchases with code EXPLORERS30 at checkout. Cheers.
Sure, absolutely. Listen, there are free-for-all, very fluid, polyamorous collectives, micro communities that work, right? Mm-hmm. And it feels like no one's having conversations and it's working, and they do exist. And the thing that they have had a conversation about at some point is that is how they're gonna roll. Like, that's the nature of that group, right? Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, yes, there are certain polyamorous relationships where people talk about every single detail, every single agreement, every single you know, boundary, and everything is processed and, you know, detailed and maybe even written down. Like, they exist. And then on the very, very other end, you get people who are like, you know, relationship anarchists, or like this non-hierarchical fluid poly where minimum conversation is had. It's just that everybody agrees that everyone's going to do whatever they want to do, and that is okay for everyone, right? There is no better or worse. You know, there is no one of the structure that I champion over another one or recommend over another one. It just needs to work for you. It just needs to be the relationship that you're going to thrive in. And only you will know if you're going to thrive in that kind of relationship and what kind of relationship that you will thrive in, right? Somebody who is deeply attached to their autonomy, deeply attached to their independence, you know, fluid personality, even fluid in gender, and doesn't want any constraints for whatever reason, might actually thrive in that kind of open polyamory, versus they might find the kind of the structure that a lot of communication polyamory stifling, right? So it's just really understanding, like you said, going back to what you're saying, is you need to understand what is it that you need, that you want. What is it that you want a relationship to afford you? And then pick the style that really supports that as much as it can.
Right. Because within non-monogamy and polyamory, there are multiple styles and different.
For sure.
Like, it's a spectrum. And I guess that's the beauty of relationship styles, is that there is a spectrum.
Spectrum, I would go as far as to say more of a constellation. That's the way I think about it, because I think spectrum then puts everything on a linear kind of form as well. And it's pretty hard to put non-monogamous structures in a linear form. I tried. and it's really hard, because I was using it in my practice to get people to explain. And it's really kind of hard. There's actually, if you look up a non-monogamy Venn diagram online, you'll see this like crazy Venn diagram that somebody has created of how these different relationships interlocked with each other and called what. It's kind of this crazy thing that you can do. For me, what I find is easier to think about is a constellation. There are all these different expressions of relationships, and they're kind of connected to each other. And you just find, your constellation in the night sky.
Right.
That works for you.
Yeah. I like that. It sounds like it's most important to figure out from the get-go, and maybe this is a good segue into people who are listening and really wanting to dip their toe in non-monogamy but feel fearful of maybe ending up on the wrong constellation. I was in the wrong constellation and had a wake-up call, right? I was like, this does not make sense to me, nor does it feel good. Like, I'm unsettled constantly. And I didn't have the education that I just received in that there are many constellations, and that if this is unsettling, it doesn't mean that I'm not non-monogamous. It doesn't mean that non-monogamy isn't for me. It's just that planet maybe isn't my planet.
Exactly.
And I could see how
for someone who's just been ingrained in monogamy from the get-go, but wanting to try something else could be intimidated at the idea of dipping their toe in the water and trying out non-monogamy. So maybe we can start talking about, for beginners or even people who are early in their journey, what are some things to do to set yourself up for success in non-monogamy? For sure.
Yes. If you're somebody who's solo and is sort of looking to venture into non-monogamy, and you know, currently you're not in a relationship and you're a solo person that's venturing, I would say do some research, read some books, listen to some podcasts. You're listening to one right now. There are a bunch of other ones that are specifically for non-monogamy. Definitely my podcast is with my co-host, Jacqueline Missler. It's called The Curious Fox Podcast. Multi-amory is I think multi-amory has been around for about 7 years. That is enormous amount of resource around non-monogamy. And there are a bunch of other ones. So, you know, if you're listening to this, you're probably a listener. So maybe find some other podcasts that are specifically talking about non-monogamy. There's some great books out there. I'm a big fan of Polysecure. This is my most recent. It's the book that I recommend to everyone. Of course, The Ethical Slut, which is like the manifesto that is out there. And what I say about The Ethical Slut is, it is not the gospel, but it is a book that I recommend that everybody reads and has an opinion about. Your opinion could be, it's the worst book that I've ever read, and I don't agree with anything that it says. Totally fine. Or you could be like, oh my God, I'm enlightened. I have a paradigm shift and my life is, I'm going to change my entire life because of it, right? You're probably going to be somewhere in the middle. So my invitation is not to have a specific feeling about it, but to have an opinion on that book. So The Ethical Slut is a good one. So do some research, right? To understand the bigger concept of non-monogamy and what's out there. Then I would say, before you even begin dating, next I would say, see if you can find your local community. Non-monogamous people often by nature are social. That's one of the reasons why they non-monogamy appeals to them. They like connection, they like people, they like variety, especially on the polyamorous end. And they will be your local community. I know you're in Portland, definitely. Many in Portland. I'm usually in New York, plenty in New York. So if you're in a metropolitan area, I can guarantee that you have a polyamorous non-monogamous community, and they're socializing. And they're not just socializing over sex parties and orgies. They're socializing over game nights and, you know, drinks and, you know, book clubs and things like this, because that's kind of, they are people of connection. So I would really recommend that you go and find your local community and have conversations about people's experiences and ask questions, you know, with consent, of course. Like, what does your relationship look like? Why are you choosing that? Where, you know, what makes you thrive? What are some of the things that you struggle with? And really familiarize yourself with people's experiences. And over time, as you read and listen and connect, it will reveal for you, the right constellation will call you. And I don't mean that in a spiritual way. That sounds really spiritual. But in a very practical way, like you will find out, oh, like this sounds great. And this like, oh, that I don't know how they do that. Like, I can't even imagine myself doing that. Right. As you hear the different variations of it, it will be revealed to you what will call you. Right. And that's kind of what I would say. If you're on a solo journey. If you're a couple and you're interested in opening up, pretty much the same steps. Again, do some research, have broader conversations about it before you bring it down to your own relationship. So instead of talking about what does non-monogamy, like how do we open up, who do we date, zoom out and just talk about non-monogamy as this thing, as this big topic, right? So talk about how do you feel about it? Where do you see it working? Where do you see it not working? So start big before you bring, you know, come right down to your relationship. Similarly, do some research and discuss, meet your community, and get some, you know, connect and have some conversations. Same. And then before you date, start to design a relationship that you think you're going to thrive. So get clear about why do you want to open this relationship, right? Get very clear about what's working and what you're celebrating in this relationship. And also get very clear about what you're looking for as you open the relationship. So have those conversations as well. And then before you date, this is something that I recommend to people. And those who do it really, really benefit from it. And those who don't do it come back to me and say, I wish we did this. So for about a couple, like this is about discipline that is going to help you with your journey and also just was going to work with you on a very core nervous system level. Start to design time. Very specific intentional time, like you can call it dates, right? And I would really recommend you design three types of time. One is connection time, right? So get into the habit of going on intentional dates, date nights, date days, whatever it is, but set times with we're going to do this for us to connect. Talk about what kind of connection and how do you want to feel, right? Do you want to connect and feel excited? Do you want to connect and have a sense of accomplishment? All these dates are going to look different, but be really intentional about this connection, the intentional connection time, because you're going to need it, right? The ability to be really get really connected. Next is what I call together alone time, right? And this is when you are connecting with yourself and intentionally, temporarily disconnecting with your partner, right? This could look like, I'm going to do an hour of yoga and the other person is going to catch up with reading that they've been putting off for a while. Now, what this isn't is, oh, I'm going to be on my phone here and you do the dishes over there, right? This is intentional time that is set that I'm going to connect with myself, with my partner that is separate from me, but in the same space, right? This is going to allow you to tolerate disconnection and separateness, and you're going to need that muscle. Right. So you know, something that I do with my partner, we go out dancing together and we dance separately. So we'll go to a club, we'll go to a dance class, we do a lot of intentional movement and dance. And then we'll say, okay, this is a together alone time. So we'll be in the same club, or we'll be in the same dance space, and we'll dance separately. We'll have our own time, maybe we'll dance with other people, but we're intentionally not connecting with each other, and we're also not making bids for connection. We're tolerating this connection and actually seeing if it's an opportunity to find connection with ourselves, maybe some self-reflection, you know, like something good, right? We're looking for the joy in the disconnection. And then, of course, we connect back again. So that's your together alone time. And the third is alone time. Again, this is intentional time that you spend with yourself, separate from each other. You go and take up a hobby. You go and discover a new museum. You connect with friends that you haven't in a long time because you've kind of been in this duo. And that's really important because it is going to be almost impossible for the two people to go on dates at the same time. The chances are one person's going to be on a date and the other person's going to be at home, right? You're going to have to get used to spending time on your own that feels good. You don't want to be sitting around yearning for the person, worried about the other person, you know, engulfed and kind of about what the other person is doing. You got to get used to spending quality time with yourself, doing things that feed you, that you can thrive, right? So you do that before you even start dating. This is a discipline about how you manage your time and how you manage your connection and disconnection. Once you've done that for a couple of times, ideally on a weekly basis, right, your nervous system is going to look very different than before you do that. You are going to get used to this idea of connection, disconnection, without the world falling apart. Because where I see where people struggle the most when we dig down all the stories is connection with disconnection. The pain of disconnection, inability to tolerate disconnection, and not being able to connect with themselves or not being able to connect with the other person after they've been connecting with somebody else, right? These are the core emotional muscles that's required for any relationship and absolutely essential for non-monogamy. Once you've done that, there's also a bonus in that. What you've done is you've carved out some time. The time that you carved out for yourself is the time now you can allocate to dates. Because what happens is, if you don't do that, when you start dating, you got to carve out time from somewhere, and you immediately start to carve out time from your core relationship. What does that do? Upset people, of course, right? But if you have actually carved that time out throughout this process, it doesn't feel so painful. It doesn't feel so urgent. It doesn't feel like someone's being wronged or being taken from. Right? Then you can start to say, okay, during my alone time, I'm actually going on a date. And the other person's like, oh, great. in my alone time, I'm going to connect with an old friend. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it's makes a ton of sense. I think that taking time from someone that has existed would be painful and feel like mm-hmm. you're giving them less, and nobody wants mm-hmm. to feel like suddenly I'm getting less in a relationship. Nobody wants to feel like that, right?
Of course. Yes.
That makes a lot of sense. Also building those muscles of feeling secure in disconnection, because mm-hmm. and perhaps where things go wrong in a monogamous relationship, like we disconnect all, and we have to do life, have moments mm-hmm. of disconnection. Mm-hmm. And that can be, I know for myself, I have a lot of abandonment issues. So when I'm very aware, yes, I'm doing therapy mm-hmm. around them, but I'm very aware of them. And so disconnection can send me into like high anxiety, like this feels like someone's leaving me, right? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. and so learning and doing the work, the self-soothing and reassuring and finding joy even in those moments and in my own, like instead of it just being disconnection, this is time to reconnect with myself and hey, maybe get to do some of those things I can't do when I'm with my partner, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And finding those moments of disconnection exciting. Building that tool, those tools, those muscles, it makes a lot of sense mm-hmm. to me.
Yeah. Just so that you know, people say I have abandonment issues all the time, right? Yeah. And we kind of like, we joke about it or we sort of brush it off. Let me just put context, and you feel this, so I'm just going to provide context for people to understand what that means. When people struggle with abandonment, they're struggling with a nervous system that equates abandonment with literal death. Like, on a, yes. because, exactly. So it is the attachment is our core, number one, first ever defense mechanism. We're born with, a human infant is born 100% dependent with zero boundaries. That is just how humans are made, right? Then we... The only thing that we know is that in order to survive, prime directive, survival, we need to attach to somebody, a caregiver. We know that this is pre-programmed to us as a survival mechanism. And that attachment, that first attachment is what keeps us alive. Literally, a human infant matures way too slowly. 3, 4, 5-year-old toddler cannot take care of itself. If you abandon that child, it's going to die, right? So in our nervous system, we have a very clear message, what I call a piece of code in our operating system that says abandonment at a certain age is death. And we come up with all sorts of strategies to maintain that attachment, right? And when somebody has an abandonment issue, and I'm throwing air quotes here, it is that they have a struggle with that very core piece of code. And as an adult, it's still triggering like a child. So when they think of abandonment, they think they're going to die. So we just need to be really compassionate with those people. We need to understand that they're not doing the things they're doing because they want to be difficult or demanding or evil or, you know, spoiled. They're doing it because they think they're going to die on some level. And it just needs our extra compassion, extra attention, you know, to help them heal and support them.
I really appreciate, I guess I've never had the words to explain it that way. And I do think that it's probably a term that gets overused, but it's also severely misunderstood. When my abandonment issues are triggered, my body goes into fight or flight, and even that's overused, but I tried to explain it to my partner as it's suddenly like my body is reacting on a level of like bombs are dropping around me, right? I feel like something horrible and nightmarish is about to happen, and learning to override that and realize, well, I'm going to be safe and I'm going to be fine and life is going to go on and nothing horrific is happening, and turning that reaction off is very hard. And I think, but it is something, a muscle that can be built. And I'm mm-hmm. learning how to do that, which has been amazing. Like for a long time as someone with those issues, I just assumed we all reacted that way when relationships were struggling or coming apart. And then one day I woke up and I'm like, oh no, not everybody feels mm-hmm. this way. This is unique to my situation. And in non-monogamous relationships, I think it's super important to know what your stuff is and to be able mm-hmm. to communicate that with your partners mm-hmm. so they understand yeah. how to be conscious of sure. your stuff. And also, yeah. I think, like, I feel like it's very important for me to take accountability for my mm-hmm. own stuff, right? And ask for, sure. for what yeah. I need. And if I'm with a yes, partner yes. who cannot give that to me, then that is not a relationship that I can maintain, right?
Sure.
So.
Yes. Yes. And I think it's important to diversify your support system. If you have abandonment struggles or any kind of relational struggles, but abandonment is a big one. And by the way, if we all react to abandonment. It is in our core system. It is a very human thing. We do, you know, in a similar way, if we go instead of a personal development, if we go species development, right? Abandonment and rejection from the pact meant that you died in the wild, right? Because you couldn't sleep. So early human, like majority of our human species development, abandonment and rejection also meant death because you couldn't survive in the wild. So it's very much wired into our evolutionary system that abandonment is scary and it has consequences. So some people feel it a lot more severely, like it sounds like you do. Some people don't feel it, but nobody's blasé about abandonment. No one's like, ah, I'm going to be okay. Some people tolerate it a lot better, but it is not something that you just like brush off easily, just to give you some context. And the makes other piece that better. I wanted to yeah, no, totally. And the other piece I wanted to say is also if you are somebody who feels it acutely, like you're saying you do, one of the things that I really recommend is to diversify your support system. Your partner cannot be the only person because that's actually counterintuitive, right? You want to be connected to multiple people so that abandonment from one person doesn't feel so severe, right? So you can have all sorts of relationships. You can have friendships. You can have, you know, close to your family if this is available to you. Mentors, mentees, colleagues, peers, you know, whatever those relationships are, it's really important to have a diverse set of relationships in your life that will support you with your abandonment issues more than having one partner who you have said, I need you to support me with this. And they're your only source of support. Right. Because that's going to kick back because anything they do, then you're just going to be like carrying that relationship with kid gloves, because that's going to be the most important relationship for your existence. And you don't want that.
I agree. Yeah, that resonates. And in some ways, I think is also why I have been attracted to non-monogamous relationships. Right. Mm-hmm. Oddly enough, and I guess not oddly enough, now that you explain it, it felt more secure to me. I'm very fortunate. I'm very fortunate in the friend and community department. But I feel like you've given a really fantastic starter pack for people, whether they are single and wanting to try non-monogamy or couples and trying to open up, which are two very different experiences and two mm-hmm. very like totally different podcasts as well, mm-hmm. episodes and topics, sure. because it can be very difficult if you started out in a monogamous relationship to open up, and it can be very touchy and a fragile relationship can be fractured by that. But sometimes it's also, I think, the thing that can help a relationship become healthy or healthier.
Yeah.
So listeners, if you have stayed till now, which I hope you have, this would be an excellent opportunity for you to send me questions about specifically that. Are you in a relationship and you want to open up? And I know some of you are because I have gotten messages from you in the past. What would you want to ask Effie about that? What are some questions you have? Are there any final thoughts you want to leave my listeners and me with before we wrap this up?
Here's what I want to say. Among the myriad of relationships non-monogamy can afford, the most important of them all is the one with yourself. So cultivate that relationship above all, and then approach your relationship from that place. And that relationship with yourself is not going to be fixed, right? Because we get to this idea of this idea of a love yourself, which is something that I, you know, question a lot. Like, we get a lot of this message, like, you must love yourself, you must love yourself, you must love yourself. there's a big fee. It's not that available to us, especially in a for women in a capitalist patriarchal society. Loving yourself is not an easy feat, right? What I really encourage people to do is develop a relationship with yourself. Start with tolerating yourself. Start with being compassionate with yourself. Start with imagining what it would be to love yourself and realize that some days you're not going to love yourself. Some days you are. Sometimes you're not going to like yourself, and sometimes you're going to adore yourself and think you're the best thing since sliced bread, right? It is just allowing an ongoing relationship and not judging that is really important place to start. And then from that, with that muscle, that understanding, that insight, that self-connection, you can go into all sorts of relationships that will make, that will make sense for you. Monogamous, non-monogamous, open polyamory, whatever. Whatever calls you, you will thrive in if you cultivate that relationship muscle with yourself first and foremost.
That's relationship with yourself. That's one that can be a challenge, but I think is a worthwhile endeavor for sure.
Yeah.
I often tell people that my most important relationship is the one that I have with myself. Yeah. That's been a journey.
So there's a Tina Horn, which is a great, she's a sex educator and she does a lot of talks. She has a whole talk on how everybody is polyamorous because our relationship with ourselves counts. So I find a kind of an interesting twist on things as well. And she's like, the point that she's making is that the relationship with ourselves should be as important any other relationship. Therefore, we are all polyamorous. So that's just something to leave you with.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. And can you give my listeners, before we wrap this up, a rundown on how they can get in touch with you, how they can watch you, how they can connect with you virtually?
Effyblue.com is my website. That's EFFY, blue like the sky, .com. Have a look through the site. If you're interested in looking for support around your transition into a version of non-monogamous relationship, a non-traditional relationship. So I work with people who are transitioning into non-monogamy, also blended families, platonic co-parenting, anything that is not your traditional sort of couple. Though I do have a lot of those clients as well, but that's kind of where my passion is. So effyblue.com. From there, you can book a 20-minute mutual assessment call so we can talk about what's going on with you and if I can help. I also really recommend you check out the Curious Fox podcast. We cover love, sex, and relationships week after week. We talk a lot about non-monogamy. My co-host and I are both queer, non-monogamous women who both do this stuff from a professional point of view, but also live it in our lives, and we share a lot of that stuff. And then that's wearecuriousfoxes.com is the website that goes with the podcast. And we have a lot of blog articles there. We have a lot of videos. Curious Fox used to be an in-person community in Brooklyn, New York. And we used to do a lot of events and socials and workshops and that kind of stuff. And we recorded a bunch of that. And that's all on the website. And so and those are, I would say, the main spaces. So for me, effyblue.com. For endless resource on this stuff, we are curiousfoxes.com or Curious Fox Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, check it out. I did check out the website and it's pretty awesome. So take some time to go there. Take some time to listen. If you guys want to connect with me, you know where to find me. I'm on Instagram and Facebook, Locker Room Talk and Shots. She explores life. You can find me on TikTok at Locker Room Talk Podcast. Website, Locker Room Talk Podcast. What is it? LockerRoomTalkPodcast.com. And don't forget to watch this podcast on YouTube at Annette Benedetti. You can listen and watch, and you can actually see who we are and send me your voicemail. Thank you so much for joining me today, Effie. And I look forward to talking to you in the future. And to my listeners, I'll see you in the locker room. Cheers. Ring loop. Bring sexy back in 2024 with hot lingerie, sensual body products, and adventurous sex toys from lovehoney.com, all at a 15% discount with code EXPLORES15. Embrace your inner bombshell with their gorgeous bra and panty sets, baby dolls, and corsets. Then explore your desires with their line of toys that range from vanilla is my flavor to
tie me up and call me good girl daddy. And don't forget to treat yourself to a massage candle or a sensual body oil, all for 15% off with code EXPLORES15 when you shop lovehoney.com. That's right, 15% off on lingerie, sex toys, and more when you shop lovehoney.com and use code EXPLORES15 at checkout. Cheers.